everybody.
Hi, guys. Well, from ever more warmer Salt Lake City, Utah,
it's Thank God I'm Atheist,
the podcast.
I'm Frank.
And I'm Dan.
And coming up today, we're going to talk about... what are we talking about?
We're talking about the Lord saving one group of people over another group of people.
Is that what we're talking about?
Oh, yeah, that's right. Okay.
Wow.
That, like, completely slipped my mind.
You went to a far-off land.
I don't even know how I forgot that.
Yeah.
Anyway.
So we'll be talking about that. We'll be... Frank, by then, we'll have boned up a little bit.
Boned up just fine. I read what I was supposed to read. I just blanked on it.
All right. Well, you'll have to rebone then.
Yeah, anyway.
So coming up on today's show, reboning. That's what's coming up.
Sure. Okay. Never mind.
That's not a thing. Why don't we dive into some stuff here? What do you got?
Well, I have I'm going to get a story out of the way.
Okay.
Because, you know, we like to laugh on this show, but sometimes something tragic comes up that has to be talked about.
We've
got
to address it. Yeah.
Once again, Bangladesh is in the news for its treatment of basically anybody who isn't Muslim.
I'm just going to say, on our show, if Bangladesh comes up, bad things have happened. That's just like other shows. Maybe they can bring up Bangladesh and it'll be a happy story. But we really don't have any happy Bangladeshi stories.
Yeah, I can't even imagine what the show would be.
Yeah,
that would find positive things. Oh. It seems just a horrid place at the moment. Nazimuddin Samad. It was the most recent. Victim of these gang attacks on atheists in particular. There was a list of, we mentioned this a couple years ago. I think it was like 84 atheist bloggers who had been identified and put on a list and widely circulated to Islamic groups in the nation. As people to target,
right?
With these violent crimes,
specifically designed to say, "Hey, look at these assholes! Yeah. Anybody got a machete?"
Yeah, and so that's what happened. Nazimuddin Samad was hacked with machetes first at a traffic intersection on Wednesday, and then he was shot. He was a 28-year-old,
28,
law student. He was an organizer of a secular campaigning group, the name of which I'm not going to attempt.
Oh, come on. Give it a shot.
Ghana Jangran Munch.
See?
Not bad.
That wasn't so hard.
So bad.
Well, we don't know if you mingled it or not. That's the delightful thing about us.
Those sequence of letters. Well, I didn't stumble.
Right.
How's that?
Right. Okay.
Okay. I just said it in a non-offensive way, hopefully. But anyway, yeah. So, we're talking specifically about atheists. It's not just atheists who are being targeted with attacks in this purportedly secular nation, right? They have a secular government, supposedly.
Right.
But it seems like people just kind of turn the other... Or turn a blind eye, I guess is the right phrase. There was two foreigners, an Italian aid worker and a Japanese man were shot dead late last year. Those were seemingly random attacks, but just kind of highlights. You may not even want to be foreign in this country at the moment. Shia Muslims, Sufi Muslims, Ahmadi Muslims, Christians and Hindus have all been attacked. So what does that leave? Sunnis. Yeah. So...
You were a Sunni at one point. Sooner, sorry.
Oh, dear God. Dear God, Dan.
Was there a group of Muslims in Oklahoma?
The Sooner Sunnis? The Sunni Sooners? Perhaps. I do not know. This is Bangladesh is quickly losing its prominent position in my bucket list.
Yeah, that's not a place to go. When we went to India, my mom and I went to India, and she has a friend, a dear friend of hers, who lives in a part of India called Nagaland, which is actually in this little peninsula on the other side of Bangladesh.
Oh, okay.
So India sort of, it's all self-contained, and then there's this offshoot that jumps around Bangladesh and sort
Is
mashed between Bangladesh and Myanmar.
Mm-hmm.
And I looked it up, and I was, and like both the U.S., like the CIA recommendations and the Canadian recommendations, because my mom's from Canada, both governments were like, yeah, don't go there. That's not a place for you. Yeah. I'm sure Bangladesh is similarly warned against.
Oh yeah, I wouldn't touch the country with a 10-foot pole. But thanks to global warming, though, it's one of the places that's going to disappear.
Oh, good.
So the problem is just going to fix itself.
All we have to do is
give it some time.
Just use some oil. Everybody, and we'll have dealt with Bangladesh in the most passive aggressive way possible. Okay,
that's
I'm gonna
horrible.
Move on.
I can't believe that, Dan. I can't believe you just said that.
I'm the terrible person for sure. So a new study has come out by Pew. I'm just gonna call it Pew from now on because that's cuter.
Yeah. Okay,
than just Pew.
Uh huh.
So, pew, 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 they said that they were looking at around the world, six faith groups, Christians, Muslims, Buddhists, Hindus, Jews, and the relative religiosity of men versus women.
Oh, interesting.
And they looked at the religiously unaffiliated, which I'm not sure why that would be. Well, I mean, I guess they were asking questions of all the people. Anyway,
Proceed.
So would you like to predict whether men or women are in general more religious?
Women.
Women are more religious than men, apparently, according to...
Oh, breaking news on TGIA today.
Yeah, well, here's the thing. I don't know if it seems obvious to you, but it doesn't seem obvious to me, considering the fact that most of these, if not all of these religions, put women at a lower place than men.
Yeah, I mean, it's not like it's not still fucked up. But
which is, so there is some counterintuitiveness to this whole thing, but I feel like that's part of the deal, because what they've done is they've actually looked at, they've also looked at women who are in, sort of more elevated places socially. Women, for instance, who work and have a salary are less likely to be religious than women who don't.
Who is it that they're finding some sort of hope and solace in their miserable?
I don't know.
Subjected,
I mean, I don't think I'm willing to guess at a cause. I'm willing to, you know, throw out some possibilities, but I certainly don't know what the actual cause is, but it seems clear that that it's not a biological or evolutionary thing. It's much more a cultural or social.
It seems a situational thing. I think you put people in dire, hopeless situations, and that could just be being a woman who's expected to do womanly things and is being limited in her options.
Yeah.
She sees she doesn't have a lot of hope. She doesn't have dreams and aspirations and things that she wants to do aside for maybe some dreams and aspirations for her children.
Right.
Right.
I also feel like there's a sort of stepped down version of Stockholm syndrome that might be happening.
Where
if you're like, if you're in, you know, there, we always
love
hear
your abuser.
Yeah. You always hear about, you know, women who are in an abusive relationship and would never, ever leave because you know, they've become psychologically linked to this other person in some way.
Okay. So you have Stockholm syndrome. You have battered wife syndrome, isn't
right.
that the,
yeah.
So you have sort of the, what would you call it? Abused believer.
Yeah. Yeah, I think God is the ultimate abuser.
The disrespected believer.
Right. Right.
You know?
Eventually you become dependent upon your lower status.
Uh-huh.
Or something. Anyway, yeah. It was just an interesting thing. That, you know, what they found was that... now, here's an interesting thing. Among Muslims, there was less of a gap.
Really?
Yeah. women reported praying by more than men by only 2 percentage points, as opposed to like 3.5 percentage points.
I wonder what that is.
For other women. So yeah, I mean, that's an interesting point.
Well, I mean,
first of all, that's accounting for how many prayers are said a day, and yeah. and in Islam, everyone's required to pray 5 times.
Yes.
So maybe that just evens the odds out on that one. just the requirement, because you know, if you're required to pray 5 times, the odds of you actually praying more than those 5 times pretty low. Like you'll work it into one of the 5. Like yeah. If you got something you need, you're gonna work it in. You're gonna be it's you're covered. I'll just take care of that at noon. I don't have to do it right now,
perhaps,
or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, there were only a few outliers. Israel was another interesting outlier. So men report praying more times per day than women in Israel.
I don't know. I think judging based on a specific practice, it seems a little problematic to me because different groups are going to place different importance on different things.
Well, that was one. Only one of the ways that they tested this.
Okay.
This was a compilation of several different measures, including how often they pray, how often they attend a church or go to a religious center, like how often they take part in certain other activities. Like they had a whole list of different questions that they were asked.
Right. Okay. Okay.
So. You know, yeah. There you go. Women are, boy, they love their oppression, apparently. Obviously not the women who listen to our program.
No, clearly not.
For they have shed the shackles of men.
Yes. Well, here's something else that I guess people in general need to be set free of.
Okay.
Dan. Which is Christians need to be set free from porn. Or so says an upcoming summit, the Set Free Global Summit, sold out, actually.
Wow.
Of about 900 church and ministry leaders, and they're going to be getting together in Greensboro, North Carolina, to try to figure out what to do about pornography.
I've been to Greensboro.
Have you now?
It's a charming little town.
Yeah. Well, there's soon going to be a lot of people who are up in arms about porn. The chief organizer of the whole thing, Josh McDowell. Have you ever heard of Josh McDowell?
No.
He's the head of the Josh McDowell Ministries.
Well, he would be the right choice for the head of that
and
ministry.
And Covenant Eyes.
Ooh.
Covenant Eyes. I don't know what that is, but okay.
I'll tell you what it isn't. Those aren't the eyes that you look at porn with.
Oh, actually, you're absolutely right. It's an internet filtering and accountability software suite. And this is coming up. This is going to run from April 7th.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. It'll run through April 7th.
Oh,
today is the 7th.
Oh, we missed it.
Damn it.
Oh, I wanted to go there. All I would do is just look at porn. I would just go sit somewhere and just look at porn all day long.
Well, they have to demo, right?
Right.
How the software works.
We have to know what we're talking about here, people.
Anyway, there's going to be presentations about the neurological, physiological, psychological. I made up physiological. I was meaning to read psychological, and I'd only glanced at the word. So it's neurological, psychological, social, and spiritual effects of pornography. And this is from McDowell himself. I realized that most people, including pastors of the church, are blinded. That is something they say happens from masturbation. They just don't know what's going on. They can't even grasp the size of it.
Ooh, that was a little bit of a Freudian thing happening with that phrasing. He wants them all to grasp the size of it, huh?
He needs to grasp the size.
I just think, here's the thing that I think. I think, first of all, and I've looked at this a little bit. I sort of wouldn't say I've studied it at all, but I've looked at it a little bit. And there is controversy within the American psychological community as to whether or not something like porn addiction actually exists.
Right.
Whether they can call it addiction at all because it doesn't satisfy most of the definitions of addiction.
Right.
It's one of those things where, and it definitely seems to afflict the religious much more than it does the non-religious. Now, that may be because
they're the ones who are concerned about it.
Right. I was going to say, that may be because those of us who are non-religious and look at porn just don't care.
And like, maybe look at a lot of porn.
What's that?
And maybe even look at a lot of porn.
Maybe. Or maybe we're not so like, repressed sexually, and we just don't need to look at porn to satisfy ourselves because we can actually just enact our own sexual pleasure.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. So they did a, this is all based on, data from the Barna Group, which did a study, on Americans, the Church, and Pornography. And it was, the study was commissioned by McDowell himself. And among their findings, we find out that young adults and teens see pornography as less immoral than littering. And two-thirds have engaged in sexting, receiving sexually, or you know, the which is exchanging sexually explicit images in a text message. And let's see, 53% of pastors report that they don't have a problem in their church, but even while pastors are struggling with pornography, apparently, most pastors at 57% and youth pastors at 64% admit that they have watched porn, which I don't know if that's actually struggling. I borrowed that word from the sentence that preceded that information.
Yeah, I watch porn every now and then, and I'm not struggling at all. I'm fine. Thank you very much. The Barna Group, by the way, for anybody who doesn't know it, is an evangelical Christian polling firm.
Yeah. Let's see. The summit's going to feature just a wonderful list of people who are going to be speaking about porn. Among them, Bernie Anderson, a pastor who published a book about his battle with pornography, and Shelley Lubbin, a former porn star who founded the Pink Cross Foundation, a ministry that ministers to performers in the pornography industry.
Oh my God!
So
I wish that, you know, a fashion designer would minister to people in the pornography industry, because boy, they just need to be styled better more than anything. They, you know,
yeah,
they're just behind the times. Just catch up a little bit.
Yeah, I would say the same goes for the Christians.
Yeah,
the
evangelical. That's true. We can minister. You know? That's the ministry they need. They just, you know, it was Mormon General Conference last weekend, and boy, if they need a ministry, it's fashion help.
Yeah, you're not going to get them with your anti-Mormon literature.
No.
But you might get them with anti-ugly shoes.
Right.
Literature.
Look, we're just trying. We're not trying to save your soul. We're just trying to save our own eyes. That's all we're trying to do. I'm going to take us to Russia, Mother Russia, where a man named Viktor Krasnov, 38-year-old man, faces jail. He may go to jail.
Why?
This is Russia. I just have to reiterate. This is not Bangladesh. This is Russia.
Right, but we still aren't dealing with reasonable people here.
No. But this was the place where, like, religion was banned for decades.
Oh, yeah.
He's facing a jail sentence for writing in an internet exchange that there is no God.
Oh, my God.
There were some new laws that were put into place in 2013 in Russia, apparently after the Pussy Riot incidents
Okay.
Pussy Riot, for those of you who don't know, is two things. A Russian punk band of women who went up against the church, and also my favorite band name of all time. I really wanted a free Pussy Riot t-shirt, but now they're free, so it's not as good.
Mm.
Anyway, apparently the charges carry a maximum 1-year jail sentence, and he literally just said, he basically said, at least for me, there is no God. He called the collection of Jewish fairy tales entitled, he said something about the, quote, collection of Jewish fairy tales entitled the Bible, and it called it complete bullshit. Right. And this apparently put him in harm's way of the law that doesn't allow insulting the feelings of religious believers.
Oh, dear God.
Your poor feelings.
Russia, that's pretty amazing to think.
Right.
I mean, clearly a law that made Russia officially atheist. Right.
Right.
In the Soviet Union.
Right.
Atheist. Clearly, that's not going to make everybody in the country be atheist, right?
Right.
But boy, that's that pendulum swung.
Yeah. Suddenly, just, quote, offending the sentiments of Orthodox believers is enough to get you in jail.
Their embrace of extremism is...
They're good at it.
They're good.
Go with what you know, baby. I mean, come on. You
wow.
know, they're good
There's
at
like
extremes.
Nothing in moderation in that place.
No. I mean, that's not what they do.
Oh, wow.
It's either gray and depressing, or it's brightly colored onion domes. You get one or the other.
Yeah.
There's no middle ground.
No, I know. Wow.
So there you go.
That's quite the tradition they have.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, couldn't avoid this one. Even though we did last time, this story, actually, we could have covered it last time, but everybody was so up in arms about something else that happened at the exact same time that this one got missed.
Uh-huh.
Involves the same person, Donald Trump.
Donald J. Trump.
At the exact same event as when he commented, made his little now famous comments about abortion.
Yeah.
In an interview with Chris Matthews of MSNBC, they got on to the topic of his desire to ban Muslims from entering the country.
Yes.
Right? And he ends up saying, believe it or not, I have a lot of friends that are Muslim and they call me. In most cases, they're very rich Muslims. Okay. And then that's when Chris Matthews kind of stops him and asks him whether his rich Muslim friends would be able to enter the country under his Muslim ban.
Uh-huh.
Ban. And he says, they'll come in. You'll have exceptions. So, as with most things, you have enough money. And Donald Trump doesn't give a rat's ass.
Look, Trump understands a fundamental point, which is that if you have enough money, you're automatically a good person. It's just how it works. He knows because he has a lot of money. So he understands how it works.
He knows that he's a good person.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's the best person.
Look, I'm the best person. I'm the smartest person. Nobody's ever been as good as me. Nobody will ever be as good as me. I know this. I've got the best hair. I've got the biggest hands. Mm-hmm. I'm the best person.
Yeah.
Muslims, they're not good people, but if they have money... You know, they're friends of mine. It's okay.
Yeah.
I got to do business with these people. Yeah. Of course they're coming in.
Yes, do business with someone.
Right, exactly.
You know.
Yeah, you know, you got the Sultan of Brunei. What am I going to do? Not let him come in? Of course he's going to come in. He's going to finance my next casino.
Exactly. Yeah. This is how Donald Trump's world works.
Yeah.
He's
like, what? A rule that applies to everybody? Shut up. No.
Not to rich people. That's the whole point of being rich.
They're my friends.
Rules don't apply.
Obviously, I'm going to let them in.
Which, of course, all you have to do is think about some rich Muslims who've, I don't know,
What, like the Bin Laden family? Yeah, the whole Bin Laden family, they had lots and lots of money, but they're safe. Don't worry about it. Don't worry about it. They're fine.
When Matthews sort of continued pressing about the ban and the fact that it might rub Muslims the wrong way,
you think?
Trump instead argued this time that having the ban would have a galvanizing effect on Middle Eastern countries in the fight against ISIS. Maybe they'll be more disposed to fight ISIS. Maybe they'll say, we want to come back to America. We've got to solve this problem.
Yeah, that's what they'll say.
Entry into the United States is so important.
That they'll do. Well, and there's no chance that they would look at that and say, look, America's turning their backs on us. They are now all of our enemy and unite with ISIS. Like, there's no chance that that would happen.
Right.
Like, basically, the United States declaring that Islam is its enemy couldn't possibly have any deleterious effects between us and the countries of the Middle East.
No. This is clearly well thought out.
Yeah.
Foreign policy.
So, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well done. Well done, Donald Trump.
Yeah.
You keep on. Keep on going.
I've got some news. Do you remember when you and I went on a road trip through the South for this particular podcast?
Yeah, a few years ago now.
Yeah, one of our first stops was Groome, Texas.
Yes,
where we saw an enormous cross in the middle of nothing.
Yeah, yeah.
Literally, Groome, Texas has like four houses and a gigantic cross on the side of the freeway. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's what they're known for. Well, not to be outdone, the city of Corpus Christi, Texas, which of course means body of Christ.
Yeah.
Is now going to have, the ground has been broken for the largest cross in the Western Hemisphere. this will beat out a cross that was in...
Where is the one in the Eastern Hemisphere, Dan?
Bangladesh?
No, it's not.
I don't know.
well, this keeps coming up because they had the same claim in Groome, right? That was the largest or the tallest cross in the Western Hemisphere.
No, that was, well, it was at one point, and then they got beaten out by something in like Indiana, I think.
Yeah, they like big crosses too.
So anyway, Texas finally. Everything's bigger in Texas.
Yeah.
They're going to get it back. They're taking back the title.
Good.
In Corpus Christi. If you fly into Corpus Christi, apparently you'll be able to see it from your plane.
Good.
It will be over 200 feet high.
Oh, my God.
210 feet high and 95 feet wide. So that's pretty good.
Oh, my God.
They're definitely making a name for themselves now. It's so big that the design allows for a 2-foot deflection at the top for wind. Like it can,
there's sway.
Yeah, 2 feet of sway
allowance,
so that it doesn't just come toppling over.
That's smart. That's smart.
Well, it's probably in tornado country, isn't it?
More hurricane.
Oh, okay.
Corpus Christi.
Yeah.
But
Madrid. There's your largest cross. Sorry, I just found it.
Oh, really?
Yeah, apparently in Madrid, there's a 495-foot cross.
How are we letting them outdo us? This is terrible. They're they're not even halfway up the high. What? This is bullshit.
This is super bullshit. We're not even close. I'll tell you what else. A city in Michigan apparently has turned their cross into something else entirely. I'm trying to figure out what that is.
Is there an observation deck? Are they planning an observation deck, Dan, in Corpus Christi?
Yes, you have to walk out, and you put your arms out, and you hold on to these things on the side, and then you get crucified.
Oh, that's
nice.
You just
dangle from in the middle of the cross.
They should have a zip line from the top.
They should have a zip line. I've never understood how few zip lines there are in the world. I was up on the mountain, in the foothills of Salt Lake City, up by Ensign Peak just the other day, and I looked down at the Capitol, and I was like, how is there not a zip line all the way down?
Yeah, right?
be so much fun.
It'd be a good zip line.
Be awesome.
Be a good zip line down.
Mm. All right. Somebody get me, you know, some investment seed money and we'll get the zip line project going.
Well, we need a big cross first. We could have the world's largest cross in Salt Lake City. That would show the Mormons.
That'll show everybody. No one will understand that move. They'll never see it coming. Well, if y'all have anything you'd like to suggest for the best zip line and or cross combination in the world, you can do it by writing to us at podcast@thankgodimatheist.com.
Or you can leave us a voicemail message. The telephone number is 424-666-8442.
Yeah, go to the Facebook page. It's Facebook. You know, we need to get over 10,000 likes on Facebook. We're not quite there yet, and I would prefer it if we were there. So go there.
And like us.
Click like. See what Mackenzie's posting. It's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
We've got enough listeners.
Yeah, you guys...
We should be well over that by now.
Yeah, but we're not.
All right. And of course, while you're on Facebook, liking our Facebook page, you can also search for the TGIA Members Only Lounge.
Indeed.
It's a closed group, meaning you have to request to join, and then we'll let you in. As long as you're atheist.
Yeah. No trolls allowed.
No trolls.
All right.
Okay, well, we're going to take a quick break. This is one,
it's Juan.
It's one Mr. Pat Robertson.
Patty boy.
He takes a position that we took.
Kind of. We'll hear what he has
here
to
he
say.
Goes.
You know, it's interesting what Trump says. It shocks people, but at the same time, the old adage was that abortion was illegal, that it was murder. And consequently, if it's illegal and it's murder, then there had to be some penalty attached to it. That's why it was so very, very hard to get any kind of legislation against this sort of thing. And now they say, well, it should punish the provider who does the abortion, not the woman who's having it, which sounds more reasonable. But in any event, if somebody says abortion is murder, then what do you do to somebody who commits murder? I mean, so it's a dilemma that people have been wrestling with, and I'm certainly not going to get into it, but that does seem a bit draconian. But at the same time, we've slaughtered close to 50 million unborn babies in America since Roe versus Wade. It's been a slaughter that is unprecedented. And these are innocent human beings that are being slaughtered. And we had the scandal of Planned Parenthood auctioning off or selling off the various body parts of unborn babies. I mean, it makes you sick at your stomach. But these are human beings.
They're human beings.
Yeah.
Or not. And maybe the women should be punished or not. I'm not going to get into it now. Certainly draconian. But maybe it's right, and maybe it's wrong, and I don't know.
Has he had problems with draconian laws in the past?
No. Well, if they're his kind of draconian, then no.
I mean, that's why this just seems like it would be right up his alley. But
yeah, except that again, that's the thing is that like people can't, even people who are so adamant against abortion and that it's murder and all this stuff. The second you start to say, well, okay, should we punish the murderer? They go, no. That's not what we're saying. We're not saying that.
Yeah. Actually, we have a voicemail.
Yeah, it ties in very neatly.
This is from Sarah, and she's a longtime listener and a good friend.
Hi, Frank and Dan. This is Sarah calling from beautiful Eugene, Oregon, at least currently beautiful today. And I was just listening to your recent episode where you're talking about the abortion question of whether women should be punished if abortion is made illegal. And initially I completely agreed with you that it, you know, the logic of the pro or the anti-abortion side just makes no sense. But then I realized that it actually perfectly conforms to a sort of core philosophy that they have, which is that women, when it comes to procreation, and that includes from virginity to losing their virginity to getting married to deciding to have children to raising children, are actually not agents of their own lives, or at very least, they can't be trusted to be agents of their own lives. So this just plays out that perspective, which is essentially that women are incapable of making their own decisions about their procreative choices, and so if they have decided to have abortions, that's obviously somebody else's fault, because women can't make those kinds of choices as fully functional humans when they're, you know, gestating and whatnot. Anyway, just that was my thought on it, and hope you guys think it's interesting as well. Bye.
See, that's a great point.
Yeah.
Obviously, we can't blame the woman. She's not capable of making these decisions.
Yeah.
It would be like Texas putting a mentally challenged person to death after a murder, which would be ridiculous.
They would never do that. No, clearly not.
Yeah, that's a great point. I mean, it does sort of fit into the narrative that, you know, men know what's best and women just need to do what we tell them.
Yeah.
So if they had an abortion, somewhere there's a man who's at fault. The woman's at fault, but we can't blame her or something.
What if the person who performs the abortion is a woman?
See, now you're going down the rabbit hole. This is the problem with religious fundamentalist thinking is that if you try to apply logic too hard, everything breaks.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Including your brain.
Immediately.
It all breaks. I'm going to read an email.
Please do.
We've got other voicemails and stuff. Hey, Frank and Dan. This is from Anonymous.
Boy, Anonymous?
Anonymous. That person's famous.
Yeah. Did they read it?
No. Yes.
You have to read it with the voice.
This was actually hacked onto my computer.
you don't even know where it came from.
Right. No. An anonymous person writes, as a TGI listener and woman who has indulged in breast augmentation surgery, I thought I would write in response to your last episode. Now, I'm going to remind our listeners that our last episode, one of the things that we discussed was the preponderance of plastic surgeons in Utah and the Mormon woman's tendency toward plastic surgery.
Yes.
And we attempted to make some logical sense of it, but you and I are both men.
And we took our best stab at it.
Right. But we certainly don't have all the perspective. And it was nice. We had an outpouring of female perspective on this.
Which is wonderful.
Fantastic.
And you know what? I often think that sometimes the segment is just starting a conversation.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
We say what we think, and then I love hearing back when people have more to add to it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. We say what we think, and then everybody writes in and goes, you guys are idiots. Here's how it really works. She says, while I can't explain the Mormon reasoning for so many boob jobs, I can tell you that mine was never about becoming more attractive to the opposite sex. I've been happily married for almost 15 years. I won't deny that my husband does benefit, but I believe my motivation was a sort of keeping up with the Joneses being the women around me.
Oh.
Example, in one mom group I've been a part of for 13 years, 4 out of 9 of us have new breasts, and the fifth will have them before the end of the year. So cheers to new boobs, she says. Love you guys, Anonymous. You hear that refrain a lot, that women don't look good for men, they look good for women. And that's a thing.
And that's one of the things we talked about.
Yeah.
That it's the other women.
Yeah. It's especially intense within Mormonism, but... You know,
but, I mean, is that what she's saying?
No, she's just saying that
everyone around her is getting them. So
she wants to keep up.
All right.
Yeah. I have my personal views on the aesthetics of fake breasts as opposed to real ones, but that's neither here nor there.
Right.
Yes. Let's move on before I get into trouble here. Should I do another voicemail or another?
Let's hear more about this.
Oh, you know what? I decided that voicemail kind of covered the rest of what everybody else was saying. So let's just play that other voicemail.
Okay, perfect.
Hi, Frank and Dan. This is Ashley. I just finished listening to your conversation about Mormon boob jobs, and I just had to call and give my 2 cents. As a born in the covenant, raised in northern Utah, Mormon girl who married at 19 and had 4 kids by the time I was 30, I can tell you that a big part of it is that culture to get married young and have lots of babies fast, because then you hit your 30th birthday and you're left with a saggy tummy and saggy boobs, and there's really no amount of beach body workouts or it works wraps that will fix that for you, so you go the plastic surgery route. I know a lot of women who've done that. And then one other thing I wanted to touch on is I feel like polygamy has a very subtle influence there as well. As a Mormon woman, we constantly have that looking over our shoulders. We know that even though they don't practice it now, in the next life, you know, we will be practicing polygamy. And even now, men can be sealed to more than one woman in the temple. So if your husband is bored of you or you're not attractive enough, then he can just find another one and go get sealed. And ta-da, you have a sister wife. So that adds to that pressure to remain physically attractive all throughout life to your husband. And then one last thing, I have known women whose husbands have watched pornography and they feel like if they get the boobs or the perfect body and look like the women in the porn, then their husbands won't feel that need to watch porn anymore. So there's that as well, which of course does not work. But anyways, those are my thoughts. It's definitely a huge cultural thing. There's a lot of pressure to have that perfect Mormon body. Love the show. Hope you guys are having a fabulous day. Bye.
I think those are brilliant points.
Mm-hmm.
The polygamy angle I had never thought of at all.
Right.
Because polygamy is not practiced in the church anymore. But she's right. Like, there's eternal polygamy.
Yeah. So you better wind up in heaven. Looking good.
With a hot bod.
Woo, yeah.
Or at least not have pissed him off while you're here. you don't want him to lose interest.
Yeah.
It's so fucked up. We had our friend April also write in. She made a lot of the same points that that caller made.
Yeah.
But she also said that just adding to the whole, because Mormon women tend to get married very, very young. And so... she said that she believes that emotional maturity can be stunted when you marry and become a parent at such a young age. And that also informs a lifetime of decisions. Mm. I thought that that was an interesting point as well.
I'd like to bring up the fact that, the transcription of that voicemail
by Google,
is really interesting because it's gotten a lot better.
Uh-huh.
Like they're doing, like when they first introduced transcribing voicemail, it was a thing, and it was like you could kind of skim it, and if you read it really fast and kind of listened to yourself read it, you could kind of hear
what may actually be
what it was really saying. But now it's gotten pretty decent. But it, instead of typing out porn, it did P asterisk 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 as
what?
If porn itself is a bad word.
What? That's crazy.
Isn't that weird?
That's really weird.
I don't know why they would do that. Which also, I hadn't thought about the porn thing. The connection, the fact that Utah has such a high porn consumption rate.
Right. And so these women try and look like a porn star.
Yeah.
But
for their husband, so their husband stops watching
but
porn.
I got
That's
news for you, honey. You're still a Mormon lady. Like, you may have that porn body, but he prays.
Are you willing to do everything?
Well, and he goes to church with you. He mm-hmm. sees you with his children.
Yeah.
That's not what he's fantasizing about. It's not the body that he's fantasizing about. It's being not with you. It's being with some slut.
Who knows? Well, ladies,
just get your slut on. Get your hoe on. You can do it. Just get dirty.
Yeah. You're not really a slut if it's with your husband.
If it's with your husband,
yeah.
You're just having fun. Oh, my God. Sherry wrote into us. She said, I have recently just started listening to the podcast, so let me first say that I have seriously enjoyed your show, though I'm considering sending you the bill for the necessary detail work on the inside of my car for spitting coffee with so many of your comments.
Whoa.
Well, sorry, we owe you for that. Too many podcasts are far too serious, she says. Anyway, that said, there was one serious error one of you made in one of the podcasts I recently listened to that I think you might want to take another look into.
Uh-oh.
And that was on church-owned hospitals. You said that churches have stepped away from medical care, and that is completely off from the reality. I don't know when we said that,
but I
will just believe her that we did, because it sounds like some bullshit we would spout. The reality is that they are buying up hospitals and clinics in record numbers, particularly in more liberal areas where they know they can't change the laws. There are cases in many states, such as Texas, where women have been withheld from knowledge of or services that could have prevented serious medical issues. They are primarily using their ownership to deny women reproductive rights. Hmm. But I have no doubt they will begin to expand that to things like gays being at the bedside of their partners or even refusing to treat gays and any other people that they can find a biblical basis for discriminating against.
Hmm.
It's currently estimated that they own close to 10% of the hospitals in the country and buying more every day. I suppose they is the Catholic Church? She hasn't been clear about that. But just maybe just
churches in general. Conservative religious groups is what it sounds like.
Yeah.
To me.
It's not making the news much, and it should be. It's a serious problem.
Ah, that's fascinating.
Keep in mind that they are also opposed to stem cell research, fetal tissue research, etc. These could offer cures to thousands of medical issues. So she says, again, thank you for bringing a laugh to my very long morning drive. You two are fabulous.
Yeah, wonderful.
So thanks, Sherry. That's an interesting point, and it sucks. In the world, that's true.
The fairly strategic move.
Yeah.
You know, go into liberal areas, buy up the hospitals, and then deny the things that, you know.
Yeah, we haven't really heard about gays getting denied stuff yet.
Yeah, but if you took, you know, certain services off the services that you provide.
I'm sorry, we don't do AIDS.
Yeah.
In this hospital. We're not one of those AIDS hospitals. It's not our thing.
Or just, you know, sound reproductive health type stuff.
Right, right.
You know.
I would talk to you about reproductive health, but because you're gay, you don't reproduce. So, out you go. We had one more email that I wanted to read.
Okay.
Oh, shoot. Who is this from? It's from a person.
Wow.
It's from a listener.
Insightful.
This comes to us
lots of information.
Listener.
Wow.
Sorry, listener, I don't have you, but your information will make it on.
great.
Listener writes, I listened to the podcast about abortions and Mormon boobs, and you mentioned an abortion spell, expectum abortum. Abortum.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, okay. I think I made a joke about that.
Yeah, it was funny.
I think it was. I immediately remembered that spell from the Bible, actually a curse, so here you go. And he gave me, he did list out the actual...
Wait, there's a curse out in the Bible?
Yeah.
Okay.
This is great. This is from Miko.
Finnish?
Yeah.
Finland?
This person is Finnish.
Oh, yeah.
Very good.
I've known a Miko in my life.
Oh, there you go. So Miko says... he or she gives us a... is Miko a boy or... Okay.
Well, the one I knew was.
Okay. A too long didn't read version, which says, if a husband suspects a wife has been unfaithful, he can take her to the temple and bribe a cleric to cast a curse on her. The woman has, if the woman has been unfaithful, her belly will swell and she has miscarriage.
What?
If she hasn't been unfaithful, she should survive the curse. So that's some fucked up shit.
Yeah.
But what it points out is that the Bible is pro-abortion.
As long as it's brought about by a prayer.
Yeah.
You know, or a curse.
I mean, this is basically... So this is... I think this is... where is this from? This is Numbers. In the book of Numbers 5.
So as recently as... what, 5,000 years ago?
Sure, whatever.
Great, cool. 4,000 years ago.
I do
That's
like
wonderful.
It. Like the way what a man's supposed to do if he suspects that his wife has had sex with another man.
Wait, you said a weatherman?
What a man is supposed to
do. Oh, okay. Sorry.
Yeah, what a weatherman is supposed to do. he takes his wife to the priest. He must also take an offering of a tenth of ephah. Of barley flour on her behalf.
Oh, okay.
He must not pour olive oil on it or put incense on it. That's very important.
Okay.
Because it is a grain offering for jealousy, a reminder offering to draw attention to wrongdoing.
Oh, okay.
Then the priest shall bring her and have her stand before the Lord. Then you shall take some holy water in a clay jar and put some dust from the tabernacle floor into the water. After the priest has had the woman stand before the Lord, he shall loosen her hair and place her in her hands the reminder offering. Anyway.
Oh, my God.
Blah, 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 blah. There's a whole curse. And then if you lose the baby, you fucked another guy.
Oh, my God.
But yeah, biblically endorsed, clerically induced abortion.
Well, they didn't have wire hangers.
Right.
So
this was all they had. Yeah. It does make one wonder if, like, if a woman ever got pregnant and she and her husband were both like, we don't want to be parents. You know what? Let's just pretend that you slept with somebody else and see if the clerical get rid of it for us.
I doubt that's the... I would be surprised if that ever happened.
Yeah, that seems unlikely.
All right. Can I move on?
Yeah.
Okay. We have some people to thank.
Oh, man. Good.
And this seems to be the pattern at the moment. I don't love it as the pattern, but it's the pattern. I'm thanking everybody who signed up last month.
Okay.
On Patreon.
Okay.
Patreon.
Yeah.
They're patrons.
Of Patreon.
Patreon.
Yes.
And you can find our Patreon page at patreon.com/TGIAtheist.
Or the link is on our website.
Or the link is on the website. And these kind folk all signed up to pledge a certain amount of money per episode that we release. So this is, thank you, Zach, Aslak, Shelley, James, and Tiffany. Your support is greatly appreciated.
Yeah, there's some things in the works. We always say shit like this.
Don't even say it, Dan.
Well, good ideas are milling about. We'll just say that.
Awesome.
So let's dive into a bit of a conversation here. As we mentioned earlier, it was Mormon General Conference this last weekend.
Mm.
This is a twice a year event that ruins downtown Salt Lake City.
Once a year would not be enough.
No.
For these people.
You can't just do it once.
Because, you know, you have nothing new to say. So you got to get together twice a year and
if you say,
not say anything.
If you say it twice as much, doesn't it mean more? If you say nothing twice as often.
It's just the worst. Yeah, you're right about it destroying downtown.
Yeah, it's just it's funny because if you go downtown Salt Lake City, like during Comic-Con, that's kind of fun. You're driving around, you see all these people dressed in their crazy outfits or whatever.
Yeah.
It's still hard to get a table at certain restaurants, and it's still like a sort of nightmare or whatever, but at least everybody's dressed like Qui-Gon Jinn or whatever.
Sure. Right. Fun.
But, you know, when Mormon Conference happens, it's the same type of swarming behaviors, but they're all in floral dresses and shitty shoes.
And easily twice, if not three times, the numbers.
That's true.
As some of our largest events in the city.
Yeah.
Like, it's just, I mean, swarms is the perfect word. There's so many people. You don't want to be a pedestrian. You don't want to be in your car. You don't want to have anything to do with it.
It's not that bad. I mean,
if you hit North Temple,
you get three blocks away from it and it's fine.
Yeah.
Three blocks away from it in any direction and you're okay.
Try passing from the east side to the west side of downtown.
Which is kind of fun, too. There's, like, something fun about, like, you just... I mean, it's some of the best people watching you'll do. You may not want to move quickly because there's just...
Well, if you like bad shoes and ugly dresses and suits for Mr. Mac...
Oh, these suits.
Then...
None of these men have a good suit. And then every now and then there's the one hipster Mormon couple that looks all good except that she's wearing a tank top under a spaghetti strap dress, or rather a t-shirt under a sort of because you gotta cover those shoulders, ladies.
Yeah.
Gotta cover those shoulders. Anyway, usually one of the speakers at General Conference, one of the general authorities of the church, will say something bullshitty.
So a nice little foot and mouth moment.
Yeah, usually there's gonna be something where all of the us's, the people who once were Mormon and now can act, you know, now we can hear it, when it happens.
Yeah.
There's usually something for us to go, yeah. And I hadn't heard anything. Like, I was, usually that just pops up on my Facebook feed. Like, yeah. Some ex-Mormon will be like, ah, this is bullshit.
Yeah.
And they'll put it up there. And I didn't see anything. And I was like, oh, they must have just said their standard
nothing.
Must have
been the most tepid of
right.
all.
Yeah, exactly.
General conferences.
But then we got it. It mm-hmm. came up. And it brings up a larger point that applies to all of the religions, not just the Mormons.
Mm.
It's something that was spoken by one of our favorites, Dallin H. Oaks.
Mm.
Elder Oaks, they like to call him.
Gross.
He's in line to be top dog, isn't he?
He's up there. He's old.
He's old. And, he probably won't get there, but...
And he's hateful enough.
He's certainly, yeah, he's certainly, you know. and he looks angrier every time I see him now.
Yeah, he really does. I don't remember him when I was a kid as being one of the scary ones. Because I had my scary ones picked out. There was the one who always would have his talks memorized about, like, not, you know, masturbating.
Oh, really?
And he would look straight into the camera, and he would just, like, and, like, they would switch cameras. And he would immediately track
which
right
camera
over to the other camera.
Straight to the other one.
And it was just like, oh, he sees me.
He knows where I am.
now he's talking about gays. Oh, no.
He knows I was masturbating to his talk.
Scott. Oh, well, that yeah. was Elder Scott.
Okay.
Right? I think that was his name. Oh, my God. He terrified me.
Yeah. But yeah, this Dallin Oaks fella, he didn't used to be quite as scary. Now he looks kind of like, I don't know what he looks like. He's a bald, angry white man. Anyway, here's what he was saying. He said that
Richard G. Scott.
Oh,
you don't remember him?
No,
okay.
I never paid attention to those guys when I was a kid.
Anyway, sorry.
Here's what you need to understand, boys and girls. Those who of us who were unfortunate enough to be raised Mormon. It's a split. There were the parents that, like my parents, they usually had General Conference on a radio or on TV or something.
Right.
But none of us were paying total attention to it. It was just sort of this droning background noise that happened in the house.
Right.
But then there are the ones like my wife's family where the kids were required to sit and watch every talk and take notes and journal about it and, oh, this is torture for children.
See, in Utah, at least...
It's child abuse.
You get to watch it from home if you so choose.
Oh, that's true.
No, not in Oklahoma.
Not when you were growing up.
Not
I think
when
now
I was
you
growing
can.
Up. Well, if you have the satellite,
right,
you can do it. But they... We'd have to get up and go to church.
Right, go...
We'd get dressed up, just like normal, and go... We didn't get the 2 weeks... You know, a year, the two weekends a year off.
Where you don't have to go to church.
We don't have to go to church.
Home
we had
church.
To go to the nearest steak center oftentimes because that was the one that had the dish.
That had that's right. That had the satellite feed.
Oh my God.
That's so sad.
It was just awful.
Yeah.
And you'd have to sit there in the chapel, right?
And listen.
With everybody else who showed up.
Right.
And then you'd break for a couple hours and then you'd have to go back.
The worst.
Then you break again.
It's the worst.
Then you have to go back. Then you go to bed.
Yeah.
You wake up in the morning, go again.
Yeah. Yeah. Saturday,
it was awful.
It's Saturday and Sunday. Okay. Well, I feel for you. Here's what Elder Oaks said. He said, God rarely infringes on the agency of any of his children by intervening against some for the relief of others. But he does ease the burden of our afflictions and strengthens us to bear them.
Mm.
I'm going to skip the part about Alma and Halam because nobody
nobody cares.
Yeah. He does not prevent all disasters, but he does answer our prayers to turn them aside, as he did with the uniquely powerful cyclone that threatened to prevent the dedication of the temple in Fiji.
Mm.
Or he does blunt their effects, as he did with the terrorist bombing that took so many lives in the Brussels airport, but only injured our four missionaries.
Mm-hmm.
So what he's claiming is, God loves us best.
Mm-hmm.
And
he's willing to change weather patterns and bomb explosion patterns.
Right.
Yes.
So the blogger that we found this from is a Mormon woman.
Yeah.
Whose blog Flunking Sainthood is cute.
It is.
And she's and good, I think. And she,
I do too. I enjoy her blog.
She's the one that pointed out that, like, you know, if you say that we that God has protected these four missionaries,
mm-hmm.
then you're on the hook for accounting for all of the missionaries that weren't protected,
right? And throughout the year,
yeah. And if we're talking about any religion, if you claim that God has saved X. Mm-hmm. Then you have to talk about God saving Y. And this is one of the biggest, for me, one of the biggest logical fallacies of religion.
Well, God works in mysterious ways, Dan.
Right, right.
You know, like, his ways are not our ways.
Right, that's also true. However, if God saves grandma number one from her cancer, but mm-hmm. grandma number two, three, and four all die... What does that say?
Different lessons to learn, Dan.
Yeah, exactly. God needed...
Those families had different needs, and right. Grandma 1 needed not to die at that point.
Right. Grandma 1 still
had... 2, 3, and 4,
there was still work
them.
Here to do, you know, on
yeah,
this earth.
Yeah, they were done.
Regardless of whether or not she actually does anything.
Because faith, that's how faith works, Dan. It explains it all away.
Yeah.
You just don't have enough faith, Dan.
When Andrea first started... really exploring the church not being true.
Mm-hmm.
That was one of the sticking points for her, was like, wait a minute. God gets all the credit for everything good and takes zero blame when the bullshit happens. Yeah. Yep. She was so mad about it. She was just, wait, we don't blame. Yeah. And it's the same thing. You know, you hear sports heroes who are like, all the credit goes to God when they win. And when they lose, you don't ever hear a single one go, man, God just fucked us over on this one.
Well, he wanted someone else to win that day.
Right, exactly.
You know.
And that's the problem. And this happens in every religion, I think. I'm pretty
sure.
Well,
anyone that believes in any kind of, like, divine intervention or the potential for.
Right.
Right. That they have access to God through... some kind of prayer or intermediary that they can pray to,
right.
If you're Catholic, you know.
Right, yeah, right, like if, a saint or something.
Yeah, if that's the setup in your religion, then yeah, you have to grapple with this reality that sometimes he answers your prayers and sometimes he doesn't.
I feel like
And
the
I would
whole...
say actually most of the time he doesn't answer your prayers, and every once in a while he does.
Right.
From their perspective.
Right.
Right.
And he chooses the weird ones to answer. Like he won't grant you a reprieve from your cousin's horrible tumor.
Mm-mm.
But he will find you that parking space if you need it that one time.
Yeah. He made my diarrhea go away a lot.
Oh, that's so sweet of him. Oh. Him plus
explosive diarrhea.
Him plus Imodium.
Please make it stop.
Oh God. Ooh. What's great about that? What's great about, like, please grant me healing from this ailment, yeah, is that, like, eventually it either works or you die.
Yeah. Like, and guess what? Sooner or later, it's all out of your system.
Right, exactly. So. Whatever it is, yeah, please God, take this cold from me.
Yeah, it's going
to
happen.
It worked 3 days later.
We finally got around to it. It's a long to-do list.
He's got a backlog,
yeah,
that's really long. And that's what, you know, it's funny. You mentioned, like, the Catholics and they're using saints as intermediaries. It suddenly brought up this image of, like, all of these prayers just going straight to God. And it's just a cacophony and he doesn't even hear them. It's just background noise. But every now and then, but all of these saints are given, like, heavenly megaphones, like bullhorns of God. So, like, if you pray to them, one of them will go, hey, God.
I think the saints actually do the miracle, right?
I don't know.
That's what I always thought.
I mean,
you pray to someone to, you know, bless your car.
Right.
It's them blessing your car.
Right. St. Christopher, please help me in this journey or whatever.
Yeah, exactly.
They're like, okay. I don't have many powers, but I got, like, super awesome travel powers. So.
Yeah. Pew, pew. Yep. There you go.
All right. Well, if you guys have other ways in which this kind of this line of thinking affects people, you can write into us. That would be fine. We'll accept an email from you.
Why not?
Just go to your favorite email machine and use the letterboard and type in podcast@thankgodimatheist.com.
Or you can call and leave a voicemail message. The telephone number is 424-666-8442.
Yeah, we had voicemails this week. I love it.
Yay!
I love it. Go to the Facebook page, facebook.com/TGIAtheist.
And while you're on Facebook, search for the TGIA Members Only Lounge.
Yeah.
And request to join.
Yeah, do that. We want to thank the Red Rock Hot Club for the use of their hot music.
And thanks to McKinsey for all of your help on Facebook.
Yeah, we sure do appreciate it. And thank you, dear listener, for tuning in.
Bye!